ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
We are reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 12, Chapter 6, text number 32. Text 32. The chapter is entitled Maharaj Parikshit Passes Away. I think this is the first time I've ever, well, whatever, been involving giving a class on the 12th canto. Not many temples I go to are on the 12th canto. I don't know if any are. I can't remember. So it's nice here in Melbourne you've gone through to the 12th canto. It's nice to be here in Melbourne with thriving temple, ecstatic devotees, enthusiastic devotees. There's nothing on the calendar specific today, is there? Any special day today? Nothing? Nothing? No appearance or disappearance or anything like that? Pardon?
And your appearance here.
My appearance here.
Yeah.
We can talk about that, shall we? So, text 32. Interesting verses.
Param param Vaishnavam amananti tad.
Param param Vaishnavam amananti tad.
Ya neti neti tyatar utsrishikshava.
Ya neti neti tyatar utsrishava.
Visvichidoratmyam ananya sorida. Hridopaghuya vasitam samahitai.
Param,
the supreme.
Padam,
situation.
Vaishnavam,
of Lord Vishnu.
Amananti,
they
designate.
Tat,
that.
Yat,
which.
Na,
iti,
na
iti.
Not this, not
that. Eat. Everyone repeat. Iti.
Thus
analyzing.
Atat.
Everything extraneous.
Utsis
rikshavaha.
Those who are desirous
of giving up.
Visridya.
Rejecting.
Doratmyam.
Petty
materialism.
Ananya.
Placing
nowhere else.
Soridaha.
Their affection.
Kṛdā,
within their hearts.
Upaguya,
embracing him.
Avasitam,
who is captured.
Samahitai,
by those who meditate
upon him in
trance.
Translation
and purport by
Vidyananda Maharaj.
Devotees,
those
who desire to give up
all that is
not essentially real
move
systematically
by negative
discrimination
of the extraneous
to the
supreme position
of Lord Vishnu.
Giving up
petty materialism,
they offer their
love exclusively
to the absolute
truth
within
their hearts and
embrace that
highest truth
in fixed
meditation. purport. The words yanneti chitad utsasikshavaha indicate the process of negative discrimination by which one engaged in a search for essential and absolute truth systematically rejects all that is superfluous, superficial and relative. Throughout the world, people have gradually rejected the ultimate validity of political, social and even religious truths. But because they lack Krishna consciousness, they remain bewildered and cynical. However, as clearly stated here, Param Padam Vaishnavam Atmanantitat, those who actually desire perfect knowledge must not only reject the non-essential, but must also ultimately understand the essential spiritual reality called Param Padam Vaishnavam, the supreme destination, the abode of Lord Vishnu. Padam indicates both the status and the abode of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which can be understood only by those who give up petty materialism and adopt the position of Ananya Sauridam, exclusive love for the Lord. Such exclusive love is not narrow-minded or sectarian, because all living entities, being within the Lord, are automatically served when one directly serves the Supreme Entity. This process of rendering the highest service to the Lord and to all living entities constitutes the science of Krishna consciousness, which is taught throughout the Srimad Bhagavatam. Om Jnanatimanandasya Ganandana Shalakaya Chakshuran Militam Yena Tadmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pastaya Vitale Srimate Givedanta Swaminiti Namane. Namaste Sadasate Deve Gauravane Pracharine Niravasesha Sunyavari Bhastachari Sitarine. So what are the two, or what are the points in this verse and purport? Who has been listening? What points of essential, understanding are there in this verse and purport? Who can say so? One, put your hand up. Yes, Mata. So that's in a kind of a nutshell, you could say. The basic thread of this purport and verse is that that one should give up petty materialism. It doesn't say, we can understand that in various ways. It doesn't mean together one necessarily renounce or give up everything to do with the material world. But petty materialism, it could be seen. Some people take it as being giving up everything and totally trying to renounce this material world in terms of every contact. But that's not necessarily the meaning. Giving up petty materialism means the unnecessary, that which is unnecessary. Obviously, breathing, eating, sleeping, mating, if one is married, and so on. And certain social requirements are there, occupational requirements, and so on. And one is not expected to give them up, per se. There's another angle of giving up. And for those who just take it as being an absolute renunciation, so they may take to the path of impersonal path or Buddhism or whatever it may be. We sent out one article just now about the monks of Athos. You may have heard, read, seen, I don't know. Of course, they have Jesus as their pivot and their goal. But at the same time, incredible for our day and age, renunciation, you could say, of the material world, living in an island and hardly any kind of material facilities whatsoever. No females have been allowed, the monks, on that island in 1200 years. Not even female animals for 1000 years have not been allowed on the island. And hardly anyone can visit them. They barely eat or sleep. And they get up, they had to go to bed, I don't know what time, but they get up at 11 at night and they chant right through till about 6 or 7 in the morning, various prayers and readings and mantras and what have you, and then all day prayer. They say there are only two things they do: pray and die. So, of course, that's they've got a theistic concept, but they're quite renounced. But that's not the exact process that Prabhupada has given us. We've seen in our movement so many times devotees trying to make some endeavor to imitate personalities, like, you know, say like Raghunath Das Goswami, although he's a Jayacharya. But his nature was very extremely renounced, as many of you have read or heard how renounced Raghunath Das Goswami was. And of course you can list others who were probably even more so in one sense. But the point is, that's not our goal. I remember one young devotee joined in London. He tried to imitate Raghunath Das Goswami and couldn't come up to the mark, of course, but he was moving towards it. And he was chanting 32 rounds a day. Nothing spectacular. I mean, many of you probably are doing more than 16 anyway. So, but that was, but besides that, he was getting up in the morning at 2, going to bed at 11. Mm-hmm. And that was his day. And then he'd go out 7:30. He would usually miss class, actually. He would go out because that's the best time for Sankirtan in London. There's millions of people on the underground. He would go on Sankirtan down the underground stations and distribute back to Gaudiya's. And it was, all sounds very well and good. And then he would come back, and he would come back about 9:30, 10 o'clock after breakfast was over. And then he would look in the bin to see if there was any leftovers in the bin for his breakfast. Then he would go out again until after lunch was over and come back again and do the same thing. And that was it for his eating, and he would chant, maybe more than 32 rounds. And then in the evening he'd attend the evening program, and sometimes he'd fall asleep in the kirtan, you know, jumping up and down. He fell asleep in the air one time. I've never seen him do that. Pushing it, and he would challenge Japa. I several times saw him in the shower, and we only had cold water in London. No question of warm or hot water, it was just directly cold water coming out of a kind of a pipe. There was no filter. So he would stand under there with his gumcha on, with his Japa beads, chanting Japa in the cold shower to keep awake. It wasn't Prabhupada's process. One time in London, I remember, there were these devotees. They thought, and they were nice devotees, but they were getting, they thought, you know, Prabhupada's here, let us really become serious. They were getting up at 2 o'clock in the morning and chanting extra rounds and so on. And they were sat outside Prabhupada's room. I don't know whether there was an element of trying to capture Prabhupada's notice or what, I don't know, or just thinking that the atmosphere or environment was more favourable there. They were there a couple of days, and then Prabhupada came out and said, "What are you doing?" They said, "Prabhupada, we're getting up early and chanting." Prabhupada told them, "Go back to bed. You're disturbing me." The austerities that we perform are not self-made or artificial or imitative, or the renunciation of petty things, imitating others necessarily. Understanding what is favourable for the real purpose. The real purpose is not renunciation. It's not giving up things. Nirbandha Krishna Samvita Yukta Varagamuchite. We should learn to use things that can be used in Krishna's service, but in the right mood. Sometimes we think, we can enjoy anything in relationship with Krishna. We can use anything. It's true in one sense, but we also have to be careful on the other side, not going too far one way or too far the other. We have to develop or cultivate an ashita karma palam karya karma karotiya sasanyasi jiyavicha nani ragni na chakriya. We have to develop the right mood in our renunciation. Not that our renunciation damages our health or our family affairs or our mental situation or whatever it is, just because someone else is doing it. After all, the body and mind is given to us by the Lord, and you know, each one is individual. There will be general things, but there are also individual things, and that requires a little intelligence to understand. Not just like a Varnashram system where there are four orders, but even within that there will be much individuality, and so on and so forth. what is favorable for each and every individual to help to reach the goal. I mean, the goal, as you mentioned, is not just renunciation. For the materialistic person, the goal is attachment, to increase one's material absorption in every petty thing you can invent and think about. There's unlimited petty things on the market nowadays, right? That to try to, you know, satisfy the petty desires of the living entity. And I don't have to mention them, you're all quite familiar with most of these wonderful toys that they come up with for adults to play with, whatever they are. Petty things which are completely superfluous to the real purpose of life, they're waste. Simply absorb and we become completely intoxicated and absorbed in all these petty things, whether it's stuff on the internet, stuff on the mobile, stuff here, stuff, all kinds of stuff. And we get completely stuck on it. All sorts of things, televisions, this thing, that thing. So many petty things in our society today, different types of fancy foodstuffs, most of it's junk, and so on and so forth. Unlimited things to attract the attention of the jivas in this world, mayas, trying to tempt us in so many ways. So most people are just, at least in this day and age, most people are completely addicted to that type of a pursuit. It's not even karma, it's the karma. And this mostly is what people are doing. A few people have some degree of respectability with it, maybe a little bit of the mode of goodness, maybe trying to live a bit more of a natural life. And then there are some who try to renounce it, as there are some who are serious about that, maybe the impersonalists, for instance. They reject it as all nonsense and false illusion, Buddhists also in theory, as a source of suffering. They understand that it is a source of suffering, and they reject it. But the Vaishnava doesn't. His mudanashita karma palam karyam karma karotiya. He accepts that which is favorable. He accepts the whole material world, actually, everything within it, so to speak. But he accepts it as Krishna's, not as mine. And if we understand it belongs to Krishna, then what is there to reject? If it doesn't belong to us, how can we renounce it? How can you give it up? So Vaishnava understands the real proprietor, that everything belongs to Krishna. Everything is meant for a purpose, and we just have to learn to use it for the correct purpose, for the pleasure of Krishna, not for our own pleasure, or endeavor to use it for our own pleasure, or reject it, thinking it doesn't bring pleasure, but rather it brings suffering. Yehi samsparshito bhoga. That the wise person gives up this endeavor, and a devotee also gives it up, but in a different way. He gives it up to Krishna, he offers it to Krishna. He offers everything to Krishna. He's not attached to the fruits of the work. Not attached to the fruits of the work. Those are for Krishna's pleasure. And this cultivation of Krishna, this is taking shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna, offering everything. In the beginning, it may be a little mechanical. Yad karoshi rashnasi yad yahoshi didasi yad. A little mechanical, it's not completely pure. But we practice, it's a practice of cultivation, of learning to see everything in relation with Krishna, and learning to offer everything to Krishna. This is bhakti, this is devotional service. It's a cultivation. Anukulyena Krishnanu Shilanam. Shilanam refers, as many of you have studied across these things, it's a cultivation, but it has to become anukulya, favorable, for the pleasure of Lord Krishna. So, by the grace of the pure devotees, those who know this science, devotional service, how to live in this world, how to understand how things are all belonging to Krishna, and how everything should be. We should learn how to utilize that which is given to us, that which is our quota, in the service of Krishna. And this is the real process of renunciation and attachment. The renunciation of, let's say, things, seeing things separately from Krishna. Not renunciation of things so much as seeing things separately from Krishna. Seeing things as mine. giving up this concept of mind, and understanding that everything belongs to Krishna, and then learning how to utilize whatever we've been given in Krishna's service. This is the science of devotional service. Simple as that. It is not very complicated. The complications come in sometimes when we try to imitate, or we've got, you know, some selfish motivation or something, which we may have in the beginning. But we have to, you know, if we want to progress, if we want to really become released from this material world, because one of the worst, you can say, petty materialism is this subtle desire for, you know, getting material or temporary returns for its so-called devotional service. Or we become a little proud of our devotional service, become a little demanding or attached to facilities in devotional service. These will come, but this is all petty materialism. It is not actually, ultimately, it's not something favorable. But it doesn't take time before that is motivations and attitudes are purified. But that's the subtle, so many subtle anartas or unwanted desires and unwanted motivations and so on, which are unfavorable for pure devotional service. They have to be recognized in time, and we have to take the remedial measure to try to purify those and clear those up, so our motivation becomes more and more Krishna conscious, under the direction of the spiritual master in the association of Vaishnavas. And by serious application of the process of devotional service according to our position, one can gradually advance through the stage of anarta nivritti. But it may take some time, usually, a little bit patient and a little bit tolerant of each other, and try to encourage each other to progress in our devotional service. And it's not a mechanical thing only, of course, we depend on the mercy of the Lord, the mercy of the Vaishnavas. Try to take shelter of his lotus feet, as this verse infers, or the purport infers. For a Vaishnava of the essence is taking shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. We may, you know, wander off, but we have to keep coming back to take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. The Lord arranges situations for us to help us. We may not accept that or perceive that. We think the difficult situation is a result of devotional service or something, or because of somebody around me, because of the management or the lack of spiritual advancement of my so-called leaders or whatever it may be. But it's not. It's actually, you know, Krishna's hand working. We get exactly what we, you know, suitable, deserve, opportunity to advance in our spiritual lives. So we should take that as an opportunity to take shelter more of the lotus feet of the Lord and not reject the situation per se. I mean, you have to use common sense, of course we do. But in general, every situation can be also seen in relationship with Krishna and can be seen favorably to help us to take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord and not take shelter of our, you know, our mental perceptions or some materialistic idea of what it should be and so on. But it's helped to help us. Difficulties sometimes come our way. To help us to, just like I just spent 3 or 4 weeks in Christchurch, just after the earthquake there. And of course, the devotees, they were faced with a very difficult challenge, not something that has happened before at the Inner ISKCON Society, it's happened elsewhere. And, you know, it was a difficult situation, but you can take it either way. Some persons may lose their faith, some may increase their faith. It depends on their sincerity. One will increase one's faith, one will increase one's enthusiasm. With a little bit of humility, we may recognize, we can look at it in many different ways, but one way a devotee may look at it, because, you know, my service, I've not been rendering, you know, sincere service to the deity. One can look at it like that, but there are many other ways of looking at it too. But whichever way it is, you know, it can be an impetus for the devotees to become more serious in their spiritual lives. And many of them felt that way too, that the deities are still there, but now they're making us become more serious, that there are many forms. The deity manifests in many forms, and in marble or stone is only one of the many forms that he manifests in the mind. And in many devotees, they felt that he was more present than ever before, or they were.
in their hearts, in their minds. So the Lord purpose of appearing in this form is not just idol worship. He's appearing in this form so that we actually become Krishna conscious. That's his purpose, to draw us back to the spiritual world and help free us from petty materialism and help us to fix our consciousness on his lotus feet. And for many, I mean, it's not the way we'd normally do it, but for many this was the experience, that their consciousness became more fixed on their lotus feet. Much more, which is the Lord's purpose, to take us back to Godhead. It's not to keep us here in some sentimental kind of bubble. It's to actually release us from this material world, and so that we actually become, you know, taking shelter of the Lord's lotus feet, and actually become freed of all this subtle and gross material, petty materialism, various kinds, you know, quarrelling amongst each other, measuring each other, and so many different things that go on in the material world, pride, you know, feeling ill about each other, all these different things which keep us stuck in the world. The Lord sometimes asks us to do the needful to help us to break these chains which keep us in the material world. This is the Prabhupada's last line. This process of rendering the highest service to the Lord and to the living entities. So the other point, those are 2 points. One, what is it to become free of petty materialism? I mean, seeing things as mine, or, you know, I'm doing better than someone else, this, that, the other. You know, it's all right. In the beginning, it's naturally there, like children growing up. But it's petty. It's a petty kind of an approach. This process of rendering the highest service to the Lord and to all living entities constitutes the science of Krishna consciousness, which is taught throughout Srimad Bhagavatam. So this is the science. Again, Prabhupada mentions here, science of Krishna consciousness. It's scientific. It's step by step, stage by stage. We can't jump to the topmost platform straight away, but we go through the science, the process, ABC, on gradually progressing in our spiritual lives. Stay stuck in one level, but gradually advancing in our spiritual lives, and almost actually serving the Lord. One's actually in the mentality or the attitude of Krishna consciousness, doing everything for the pleasure of Guru and Gauranga. Then ultimately everyone else benefits, as Prabhupada many times explains, by watering the root of a tree, the whole tree nourished, or by feeding the stomach, the whole body is nourished. We don't have to make a separate endeavor. Of course, within the process of becoming purified, the necessary endeavor, just like last night the devotees went for Harinam Sankirtan, and sometimes on Tuesday also I think going, and many programs around the city and book distribution and this thing and that thing going on, prasad distribution from the restaurants and food for life, all this you could say appears to be material, but it's not, because it is the path of bringing us to pure devotion and also awakening that in others. So the part of the path, sometimes we hear, oh, first you have to become pure, then you can preach. But the path of becoming pure is that we engage in these activities. These are the purifying activities of going on Harinam Sangatan, of talking to others about Krishna consciousness, of distributing prasadam and following regulated principles and worshipping the deity, and so many things. They are given to us by Srila Prabhupada and our acharyas. This is the path which will purify us. We just have to know where we fit in and what is the quantity. Like simple thing in education or in medicine, you have to know what is the disease and what is the necessary thing for the individual personality, and we don't just cram it down everyone's throats. So what is good for one is not necessarily good for another. We have to see, but the general thing is there. What is favorable to become Krishna conscious or take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord? The more we take shelter of the Lord's lotus feet, the more naturally, the more our hearts will also become purified. Simply renunciation alone, although it frees us, we can say, from karma and frees us from entanglement in this material world, is not enough. It will not actually awaken our love of God. The actual process is to, one's life should be directed towards hearing, chanting, remembering Tasmatikinas Manasa Bhagavan Satakampati Shotavya Kitichabhyascha Deya Pujascha Nichida. This is the process. We should always engage in hearing, chanting, remembering, worshipping the personality of God. It is the friend of the devotees. Because this process, yadana jasana, the karma guntana bandhanam, chindanti kovidastasya kona kuryat katharatin, will cut that knot automatically by taking seriously, taking shelter of devotional service, will automatically cut the knot for petty materialism within the heart, which binds us in this material world automatically. So our whole life is designed like that to spiritualize or make every activity an act of devotion, even at work, to see one's work in relationship with Krishna. Krishna has given me the means to do this work. These people are all Krishna's servants. Everything around me is meant for Krishna. Everything belongs to Krishna. We see everything as Krishna's, even in what we would normally consider, you know, unfavorable circumstances can also be seen favorably. We can try to relate everything, how the modes of nature are working, and they're under Krishna's direction. This person is behaving in such a way, he's under, also Krishna's in his heart, he's guiding him according to his desires, according to the karma, under the modes of material nature he may be, but nonetheless he's inspired by Krishna to act in such and such a way. How we can, you know, reciprocate in a favorable way and so on. Everything can be seen in relation with Krishna. What tests and challenges we go through, even ill health, everything can be seen in a favorable way. Now, if we try to see it with ourselves in the center or them in the center, then it may not be so favorable. So the science is to learn to see how everything that exists is Krishna's, everything is meant for Krishna, and how we can intelligently, we said intelligence must be there too, not just sincerity, but and to see how it can be favorably, how it can be a favorable circumstance for one and all, so that we can gradually move towards the lotus feet of the Lord and take shelter there at the lotus feet of the Lord. So we're going to finish there. Are there any questions?
Maharaj, to the newcomers, how do we explain what is Krishna consciousness?
I'm a newcomer, I don't know. I'm a complete newcomer, I really just walked in the door. I just arrived a few hours ago.
You can learn more from you.
Really? More what? I don't know.
What is Krishna consciousness?
What is it? I have to ask someone who has it. What is Krishna consciousness? What would you say? Come on, you're not a newcomer. Come on, reveal the truth.
I would say serving Krishna and thinking about him all the time, never forgetting.
Never forget Krishna.
And doing session with the devotees.
That would probably be something nice to discuss amongst those who are faithful or a little bit faithful on the path. But you said a very newcomer. I don't know how new you mean. You mean somebody who's never been here before? It depends. Again, it's the same principle. When you're talking in public, there's general, but when you're talking individually, there may be specific. You know? We don't just talk at people. We have to find a little bit about, you know, what is their, where is their faith at, and then see what will help them to develop their faith. So there's not a black and white answer to that. You know, it depends a little bit on the other person too, not just on us or Krishna. So a little bit of intelligence is required there to see what will encourage that person to realize or understand what is Krishna consciousness, what will help them to feel inclined to practice Krishna consciousness. So what would you say? What's another answer we could give? So that's one. That's that our faith is a little developed. But then you'd have to develop on that, because those are just words which are general pinpoints, like cliches or something. So what else could you say? Yes? That may also have an effect on person, but we're talking of a real newcomer. What would you say to a real newcomer? They don't even believe in Krishna.
Would you
like some halva? Pardon? Halva. I think that's a good answer.
Yeah.
Eat lots of halva. Try and see and keep eating it. That has changed a lot of people's hearts. And there is a fact that in the beginning, when a person doesn't have any much faith, if any, a little bit tiny, otherwise he probably wouldn't even stop to talk to you, or maybe he's trying to stop to talk to you for some negative reason, but presume him, as you say, newcomer, so we're assuming they're coming towards Krishna consciousness. So again, it depends. A person may only be at that level where the tongue is the key, you know. Just, or they may like dancing and singing. Krishna consciousness means being naturally happy, sometimes you may. And, but you have to show it too. Not that we look like, you know, miserable, dead stones arguing with each other and, you know, greedy and, you know, careless for each other. And we say, Krishna consciousness is the natural process of being blissful. It doesn't go down very well. Chant and be miserable. We might attract a few people who want to be in. We might attract the goths or the emos. There has to be some substance behind whatever we say. Because the practice, one of the main things is I mean, I remember one time, for instance, there's another example. I was in Nugovadam, this is maybe many years ago. But it just stuck in my mind. It was just a small example. You could think of hundreds of better ones. But there was this group of Christians who came to the temple, and this one devotee taking them round, and I could hear what he was saying. It was a load of guff. We're doing this, we're doing that, and we've got it together. I thought, come on, be real. These people are not stupid. They can see what's going on, you know. And they were becoming totally disinterested. So I forced my way in there and started to speak a bit realistically to them about the problems we have and this and that. And they became extremely interested because they were having the same problems. People are, you know, you can't just pull wool over people's eyes with some facade. And we have to preach according to the circumstance. Or let's say, discuss things according to the situation. A little bit of honesty sometimes in terms of our, let's say, shortcomings is also sometimes very effective. That's just another example. Being a little bit personal. People then start to, you know, realize you're a human being and they're not so far away as they thought they were. When you put a picture up there, you know, we're practically speaking, we are self-realized souls and you're just idiots down here in the material world, and you do what I say and you can hey you also, and then they try and they don't, and then they think what's going on around here. So there's different ways of looking at it, you know. It'd be a little bit intelligent to see what else could we say to a newcomer or a new goer. If you don't say the right thing, they might be a new goer as well. What would you say? I mean, again, it depends what you mean by newcomer, isn't it, really? There's newcomers and there are newcomers. So, yeah, anyway, you get the idea, I think, a little bit of a thought required there. There's Jen, it's like Prabhupada. I'll give an example. Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada. He was very, in general, we speak generally. I mean, again, there's many forms, and you're developing those forms here. I can see with, you know, the different things on the notice board, you're developing various forms which may be more suitable for different types of newcomers, depending on their entanglement or their condition. Some are religious, maybe Christians, some may be Hindus, some may be atheists, some may be this. That's just one type of conditioning. So I remember one time Prabhupada was in London, 1973, he was talking to Graham Hill, the world champion racing driver. Famous man in those days. He lived just near the Bhaktivedanta Manor. And Prabhupada, he came to see Prabhupada. The devotees were trying to bring important people to see Prabhupada. The discussion would often be completely different with each and every person, depending on where they're at. So with Graham Hill, it was like 30 minutes of talking about racing driving. I mean, what has that got to do with Krishna consciousness, directly speaking? But Prabhupada entertained him and questioned about racing driving for, I don't know if it's 30 minutes, but for quite some time. But eventually Prabhupada found an introduction to help that person to think a little bit beyond the material. When it came to the point of danger, he said, well, many times I think I'm about to die when, you know, if you crash or there's a, you know, scary situation. Then Prabhupada brought in, you know, why that you're feeling and what happens when you die and different things, you know. Gradually, we didn't go very deep, but Prabhupada brought whatever was possible, you know. You only give what the person can digest. Not much point, they get constipated or diarrhea if you give too much. And sometimes that happens, you know, they fluff and huff. and away they go. You know, that's inevitable, that'll happen sometimes, but if one tries one's best to find what little something can we inject in them which will help them to advance to the next stage of devotion, or make them think. Pure devotee knows, of course, he's guided directly by the Lord. We're usually grovelling in our brains to think of something to say. A little different, you know. But there's some guidance there, of course there is, if you're sincere. But you know, one will realise after a while, but it's not, you can think of a few black and white things. I mean, like, well, what's the motive in our lives, you know, everybody? What do we want? We want to be happy. You know, you can go along different lines like that. And this is a natural way of becoming happy. Shane?
I also have a question to ask.
Please, a little louder, please. My hearing is not good.
I've also found it quite good to ask them about their life.
Yeah, that's the first thing, isn't it?
Do you have parents too? Do you have sisters? Do you have a brother?
Make it more personal. Find out where they're, you know, where they're situated, and maybe a little bit of. You don't have to get right into, oh, really? Tell me more about it, you know, get right into the whole thing. You don't have to go, you know, spend a whole hour just digging deeply into all the intricacies of their sense gratification. But you find out, at least in general, you know, a little bit, and make a personal connection, as you say, with them, that, you know, we are humans. And a lot of people think that, you know, for instance, you know, maybe married. Oh, you're married. You people get married also. Thing, you know, you have to see where they're at. I didn't realize you got married. You know, the women are allowed to speak as well. Oh, wonderful. You know, it's like, it's a, you know, something which will help them to relate to Krishna consciousness, you know. And even Prabhupada was, of course, expert at that. He had to do both things at once because he had nothing to work with, you know. So some are a little strong because he had to get somebody who was a little strong to work with. It wasn't like he had an organization with many mature members. He had to start from scratch with absolute newcomers. Absolute. So sometimes he would be also very, you know, he's trying to get some serious followers so that then they can take up the work of, let's say, finding, or as empowered by Prabhupada, no doubt, the many avenues to try to help others to come to Krishna consciousness. We've got a lot to do, and it's very exciting in one sense. We've hardly started, really speaking. We've hardly started. Just, I mean, something's going on, but there's so many avenues, you know, that can be done. Simple one which you got going here in Australia, which is obviously very effective, is prasad distribution. Very effective. We've got a few restaurants here. I don't know how many. We've got 6 restaurants in Brisbane. 6 restaurants, about 3 on the coast, 4 on the coast just south of Brisbane, and they're very effective. Prasad distribution you're doing here to catering and different things, very effective for many people. You have to see what is effective, what will attract them, and naturally after a while they'll inquire. You don't throw your, well, I'll give that example, but pearls to whatever, or preach to the faithless. You have to see where their faith is at. And see, first, as you say, first you have to make some kind of relationship. If you can, a little bit of, you know, warmth. Just the behavior of the devotee. I find the behavior is one of the most important things. You know, how we treat them with, you know, respect and nicely, treat them nicely. And, you know, show people some kindness and respect. It depends on the person's faith, you know, to use your common sense. Anything else on that? People are very impressed when they see the behavior. When Lord Chaitanya said religious principles are established by the behavior of the devotee. It's all well speaking, nice philosophy, even if it is relevant, but if the behavior doesn't back it up, it doesn't go in. It just doesn't go in, it just runs straight off. You know, so the behavior of the devotee is very important.
Thank you, Prabhupada. Well, I am very impressed by your answer. First of all, I learned that we are not body. We want to be happy. We have to have a relationship with Krishna. When I was 5 years old, my mother said to me, if you don't have a relationship with Krishna, you have to be born in another womb, which can be human womb or animal womb. For the beginning, definition, Brahma, Raja, Brahma. She told me when I was 5 years old. So you have to get out of this material world
Yeah.
So thank you very much for your answers.
Well, I didn't hammer on that point because not everybody is ready to take that. But you were, because you're not a newcomer.
What you're saying is that because in Vinay Granthi, there's an enormous relationship between male-sex, male and female, that Vinay Granthi, we have to loosen that knot. So in order to loosen that knot, we have to understand that we are body, we are
not
body.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have to understand that we are the body first. No, we're not the body first. Sometimes you have to understand you are the body first before you realize you're not the body. You have to suffer a little bit first. Some people are not quite on that level of immediate, and then some people are. I mean, you have to see. I was at a program the other day in Sydney in the King's Cross with a lot of young, kind of, you know, very respectable people coming there. But, you know, they're on a level of some kind of spiritual, they're spiritually inclined. So you can start on that level. You don't have to start from scratch exactly. You have to see where a person's ability to accept is. I remember year before last, we took the brahmacharis out, and we had a brahmachari convention at the Bhaktivedanta Manor. 80 brahmacharis came from Europe, and we had a 1 week convention. The grand finale was a Maha Harinam in London. 200 devotees, including about 60 brahmacharis, went down to London for a Maha Harinam. And I don't know if any of you were there, but it happened to be Gay Day. it was a real test for the devotees, you know. The whole city was cordoned off, you know, like two miles by 2 miles, cordoned off for the gays. There were like 400,000 of them packed in there. Can you imagine? And they may not have all been gay, but they were whatever, they were sympathizing or just going for the fun or whatever it was. It's, you know, our temple is next door in London, and Soho Street next door is one of the top gay pubs in London, and the whole street on Friday night and Saturday night are packed with gay people. You know, nothing, I mean, we're not putting up or down or anything, because so many people have that inclination, but that's just the way it is. And so, you know, when you're preaching to them, or, you know, the first one's coming, "You guy, where? I am my body," he said. "I am my body," he's shouting at us. You know. I mean, obviously, you can't preach to such persons the way your mother did to you. It just didn't go down. And you try to see if they like to eat halibut or something like that. "Great, keep it up, boy. Nice to meet you. Take some halibut." It's like Prabhupada also, when Jayananda was. Many of Jayananda Prabhu's friends in the 70s in San Francisco were drunkards. They weren't like, you know, they were just, he would befriend everybody. So many of the people he befriended were drunkards. And he'd ask Prabhupada, "How do I preach to them, Prabhupada?" And Prabhupada would say, "Well, just you say to them, okay, when you drink your wine, just see if you can get them to say, 'Thank you, Krishna. Thank you, Krishna, for the taste in this wine.'" That's their beginning. That's how they advance. So you've got to see. You didn't say you're not your body, you should give this up, otherwise you're going to go to hell, or, you know, you're not going to go back to Krishna, you have to take birth again. But just something which will help purify their consciousness. They can't understand that. They can't digest it. Some people can, some can't. And then try to say Hare Krishna as they drink your wine. "Hare Krishna, boy." "Jai. Thank you, God. Hurry, ball." Well, you get those Dondas and Harinam last night, you know, it's like in Amsterdam. I remember Prabhupada was in Amsterdam. What's that park called? The Voigels Park? Voigels Park, and Prabhupada went there, and they were all hippies and drunk, and, you know, drugged, sexed, and so on. And Prabhupada started talking, after no time, he said, "It's a waste of time speaking. Just do kirtan and give prasadam. That's all they can handle." You know, so you've got to see, you know, time and circumstance, what is favorable. That's called intelligence. Anything else? Yes, Matthias.
Is there a
let's say that I'm telling something about Krishna to a group of three or four people, and they don't really know about Krishna. I'm trying to tell them. And let's say there's one person in that group who tries to keep on challenging whatever you said. So does that make him pay for this, and should I not instruct him?
That's what? I heard up to one person who's challenging. I didn't get the rest.
If he keeps on challenging you, like you're saying Krishna's everywhere, so even I'm Krishna, well, we are all Krishna, and things like that. So
okay, they're arguing. They're arguing. Depends on time, place, and circumstance again. But, it's a very kind of, for every specialist situation, you know, there are general situations, this is a specialist situation where there's three or four persons. Whom one of them is arguing, it's, I guess different persons would deal with that differently. Don't usually get into the argument side of things. I don't know, it's, you know, every situation is like, it depends on the other persons who are there, it depends on where you're talking. Is it unavoidable? Sometimes you're in an unavoidable situation. Obviously you have to, in a very non-disturbed way, try to say, speak and without any ill feelings or whatever. I'm sure many of you have got better experience of that. It depends what the others, how the others, three or four of them, how they're reciprocating, how are they feeling. Try your best, I suppose. It's not always easy. You try your best. Try to keep a nice atmosphere. Try to find something which is in common and work from that. Something which you have in common rather than fighting on things you don't have in common. Try to see if there is something there which is in common which you can, you know, bring them along and find out what will actually, you know, if they're really adamant and really kind of, you know, sometimes that happens, but usually you get into it necessarily. You could, if you're able to actually convince the others that you know, your points are strong and are logical and clear and so on and so forth. Otherwise, find some points which you know you have in common, which will help everyone to appreciate whatever it may be. And sometimes, see, in any conversation or any lecture, generally speaking, one is inevitable in any kind of public forum, whether it's 4 or 40, that there will be different levels of consciousness. So one generally tries to, you know, satisfy the sort of the lower level specifically, so that they can, everyone can tune into it to some extent. But that's just one of the challenges in preaching. It happens all the time. You don't compromise, but you try to find something which will be common. But like Prabhupada sometimes when he's in those situations, of course, is different because he was very on the absolute fixed platform. He would be very, you know, adamant to preach the strong point. And many times Prabhupada was preaching the point, like with Christians or with impersonalists or something, and they would huff away. They wouldn't necessarily take it, but it was for his own disciples that Prabhupada would speak these things as well, to help convince his disciples of the actual situation. But when it comes to us actually presenting things, an example, one time in Vrindavan, Prabhupada had been speaking in private amongst his disciples about Gandhi, Mahatma Gandhi. And you could say many things about Gandhi, but Prabhupada was talking about how he was actually had missed the point. And that he's not really Mahatma in the real sense of the term, because he hadn't presented the truth of the Lord. Mostly political. So Prabhupada was talking this way, that one of his disciples, speaking in public, said, repeated what Prabhupada said, and it became a pretty uncomfortable situation, to say the least, amongst a lot of Indian people. So Prabhupada heard about it, and some of the Indian people had complained about it. And Prabhupada chastised him and said, I can speak like this, but you cannot. Mm. You just come out of the street. You're just a newcomer yourself. You know, so you've got a time and circumstance, be a little cautious and conscious about how we, you know, sometimes you get angry also when you're talking to people who've got some arguments and there's a group of people around. That's a sign that we're doing something a little wrong in one sense. We have to be, you know, because the other people are there. If it's a threat to people, that's different. But in general, we try to keep a cool head and not become overly captivated, disturbed by what they're saying, but just find some platform where you can actually you know, have some kind of, let's say, communication, some platform where you can. Otherwise, you just avoid it. If it's too much, you just kind of like don't get entangled in it. Just be very, very polite. But if it's a group of friends or family members or whatever, it may just, you just have to become a little bit more experienced so that you know the Shastras, you know the Bhagavad Gita, and you quote from scriptures. It's not us against them, it's just presenting Krishna's point. So you quote from scripture. You don't just fight on sentiment and logic, but one must have some Shastric backing and quote from Bhagavad Gita and so on, whatever you know. Prabhupada would always refer to Bhagavad Gita when it came to, if you're arguing with an impersonalistic person, which is, I presume, what you mentioned. You quote Shastras. Well, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says this. You can have your Bhagavad Gita with you, armed with yoga, stand and fight. Christians always have their books with them. We have our Bhagavad Gita. I don't know, you can add more to that. It's a touchy issue, no doubt. When you're in a public forum, you have to discuss it, but you only go so far. Prabhupada will sometimes cut it off. We just say kirtan in many public programs. The person was too aggressive. Depends how aggressive they are. Anything else on that point? We can further appreciation. Yes? Can we ask if there's anything more on that point first? You can ask then. Someone? Yes?
In the 70s, when Prabhupada was speaking to Melbourne Town Hall, the person called the wizard kept interjecting.
The wizard, I hear the wizard.
So he kept interjecting, and Prabhupada said, first listen, and then let everybody else have a question. And we're not here for you to dominate, it's not about you. So it's about passing my disinformation on to everybody that's here, not just your thoughts.
Yeah, that's a good point. That, you know, even amongst three or four persons, you can. Let everyone, that's a good point. And you let everyone to, well, what about the others, you know? Why one person has to argue and talk all the time? Ask the others, you know, well, what's your, find out where they're at, see where they're going. You have to speak in such a way that they will, even if one person is negative, at least the other persons can become positive. Not that one person should dominate all the time. Anything else on that? Yes,
ma'am.
It has to be on this point, not another point.
On
this point, only this point.
On preaching.
Yeah.
I mean, what my experience or what led to my experience is, if what happens is with whatever knowledge of things which we have, we try and give it to people or try and talk about it, and as you say, it becomes a little bit more aggressive, a little bit more in a conversation.
Sense of what?
There is a weakness.
Weakness.
That the moment he says, I bought a Ferrari, I wish.
The moment he said what?
The moment he talks about, I bought a new Ferrari.
New Ferrari.
I wish I bought it. So would that be advisable, would that be wise to leave preaching to...
To go and buy a Ferrari?
No, to leave preaching to people like yourself.
Yeah, because we're back to our original point, really. It's finding out what will help persons who are very attached and can't really digest or seriously take something. What will help them to advance? They may have to buy their Ferrari or whatever they want to do, but you're back to the same point. Let them drive their Ferrari to the temple here and come to the temple or whatever it is. Go to Gopal's or whatever. something which will help them. Don't expect that everyone's going to immediately accept Krishna consciousness. They're not. Don't expect that everyone's going to accept what we say immediately. They may not. We have to hope, as the movement grows, finding many ways to attract everyone to Krishna consciousness. So don't be surprised if people want to, but you just don't get into it or get angry because they don't accept. You just understand. It's like a child. You're trying to educate a child who only knows 1 + 1. There's no point becoming angry with a child if you say, why don't you understand 3 × 3 = 9? You have to, you know, understand what the child can understand. And you have to, you know, approach it a little bit from that angle. Yes, Shane.
Also,
the same point, please.
It's good to encourage in the conversation for them to ask questions instead of just giving them all the answers.
That's a good point also.
Because sometimes they have a feeling like, well, I got all the answers but I didn't get asked any questions.
Yeah, certainly. That's a very good point. Yeah, you've got a good experience to draw questions out of them and to discuss on them. Good point too. You have to see time, place and circumstance. What is the reciprocation? Anything else on that particular point? I mean, we may have missed the point altogether. So I may have the clear answer to this. Please share it if you do. It's always good to learn. You know, sometimes when you're on the spot, it becomes clearly obvious. You know, sometimes you don't even think about it in terms of, you know, what it is you should do or not do. It just kind of spontaneously happens. It's not like a pat thing. It's like trying to distribute books. Well, what do you say when you distribute a book? You know, you're going to go out there, take this book. This book's about yoga, meditation. We're helping suffering people, give a donation. I mean, you can say that forever if you want, you know. And, you know, it's like you may have a robot out there on the street, you know. It's not like, that's not the idea. It's the idea is that, you know, you take shelter of Krishna. So in those situations, if nothing else, and we see this in scriptures, it's like when Godavari Panic, we were hearing about him the other day, it was his appearance day, when he was accosted by Pastor Balabhat, you know, in a difficult situation. He just took shelter of Krishna. He didn't know how to deal with it. Sometimes the situation is very difficult. You just take shelter of Krishna. If it helps us to take shelter of Krishna, then it's not that bad. It's good. And then we pray to Krishna for guidance, what to say, or to the Guru or Nishananda or somebody. We become Krishna conscious in that situation, not just me against you or I'm going to bash you. You know, you become Krishna conscious. So different situations are there, but this is a drawing questions other people time and circumstance. Anything else? You had a question. Is it the same? Or did, okay.
Maharaj, you were speaking about like our devotional service and how we sometimes get attached to results. I just wanted to ask you on that point. Like, sometimes we do service and it's a process and we put a lot, we put our heart in it, and then the result is not what we want to do, or sometimes the service is not accepted at all. Then, so how do we develop this detachment from the result? It's just practice or something else?
Well, the Lord is helping us, don't worry, we're not alone. He's in the heart, he's our guide, the other devotees are there. It's natural that one will be attached in the beginning, unless you're very advanced. It's a natural thing. It's not something that, you know, we should be aware of, but we don't overly expect that everyone's going to become detached and like curse somebody or something if they are attached. It's quite natural. So in any society, it's developed in such a way we're just not quite big enough yet to completely cover all these things, but in due course of time there will be different states, forums and different facilities for persons at different stages of advancement, so that they can, by the right association, by hearing, by cultivating their particular limb of devotional service, one will gradually become purified of these, say, clouds in our consciousness. The more and more we associate with the pure devotees and the sun of Krishna consciousness, the holy name, taking prasadam, naturally, if we continue doing that, these, let's say,
impurities in our vision of the Absolute will gradually become purified. It's like the fog becomes removed by the sun rays in the morning. So these foggy perceptions in our consciousness will gradually become cleared away. Of course, if we refuse, that's another thing. But if we're aware of that and we want that, then gradually that will happen. The Lord will gradually clear it away. We won't be so disturbed if we don't get what we want, or we don't get respected, or we don't get... But in the beginning, there may be an institution or society that the respect is given. It's like a child learning to walk. Well done, bravo, bravo. You know, if he's 20 years old, he gets up and walks. You don't go, bravo, bravo, it's an insult. You know? You've got to see what will encourage the entity to move forward to the next stage. So in the beginning, sometimes a little encouragement is required. He says his first word, ma, 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 ma. I think, great, well done, but you have to see, you know, like that. So if one is very attached, okay, you discuss it. You have forums to discuss the personal forums to discuss how we can advance it further. And, you know, in the right association, we can get some realizations and consolations for our disappointment and so on, maybe there sometimes also, to gradually grow up, mature, and become Krishna conscious, to realize everything is for Krishna. If you love somebody, then naturally you don't, you know, you don't expect anything in return. You do everything for their pleasure. You're happy to see that they're happy. So as we mature, we'll be happy to see that others are happy, that other people are happy. But when we feel the same point, Hridayananda Maharaj is mentioning here, or whoever it is in the purport, mentions that by the science of devotional service, one automatically, by serving Krishna, one serves everybody. So when we're actually learning to do things for Krishna's pleasure, then automatically that will please others. Automatically. Even if they don't show it, it will be beneficial to them in the long run. Even they may be objecting, but still one's service to Krishna, one's focus on Krishna will benefit them. Okay, any comments on that? And then we'll finish. One or two comments on Mataji's point, how we can become free of you know, the results of wanting them for ourselves. You don't have to become free of the results. We want them for Krishna. We have to cultivate the mood of wanting good results for Krishna, for his pleasure, but not demanding or being a... You can in some cases. It's a big topic. You know, Prabhupada will sometimes become angry, or Acharya will become angry sometimes when things weren't done for Krishna's pleasure. So people may misinterpret that. But we're probably not on that platform. We probably haven't come to that platform yet. So how we can become a little less dependent upon the results on our own, so to speak, our own account. Any question, any comments on that? Right, every. Yes.
Yeah, we do the service, we don't have to be attached to the results of that service, because if we do the service, Krishna is aware of that at all times, what service we do. So if those around us don't recognize it, or even ourselves don't see the result, Krishna sees it always anyway. He knows your attitude, he knows your mood, he knows why you've done it. So it's always, the result's always there whether we see it or not.
That's philosophically correct indeed. And that's always good to remember, no doubt. Always try to remember that we're here to, you know, ultimately bring pleasure to Krishna, and not necessarily. But well, then again, one wonders, is Krishna pleased if others around one are not? One may not be so tuned in to understand for sure, be convinced for sure, or whether one can take that. Sometimes it's a little hard to take that, you know, somebody just, it doesn't even recognize your service, or even criticizes it sometimes, although you've tried your very best. One is a little spiritually advanced, will understand this. Thank you, Krishna, for giving this criticism through this other person or whatever it is, to help me to become purified in my spiritual life. But it may not be so easy to reason like that in every case. Anything else on that?
Yes.
Krishna, Sri Krishna and Bhagavatam, they mention karam karam phalki ichanata, that means just do your duty and do not expect any results. So it's just to remember that whatever you're doing is not between you and others, it's always between you and Krishna. So each and every step that you take, each and every thing that you do is always between us and Sri Krishna. So we should not be expecting any sort of appreciation, unless hard, for example, when you do something.
Yeah.
But just remember it's between you and Krishna.
We should always try to remember that. It's a similar carry-on to the previous point. We should try to remember that. That will help us by remembering these statements of Shastra and sadhus and so on. Try to remember. And of course there are, say, Krishna is in the heart and he's gradually helping us to remember and to realize that this because the fact of the matter is, and it will be there, but we just have to persevere and try not to be offensive. Try not to come in an offense, even if we don't understand it, even if we're a little bit overcome by it sometimes. In the association of devotees, and by the mercy of Krishna, we may gradually begin to see it like that. When it was actually faced with it, in the middle of it, it's not even always easy just to keep reasoning that, you know, it's all for Krishna and so on. But try not to be offensive towards devotees. Try not to blame anyone. Try not to blame others or whatever. And eventually, we're just like Balabhati. He also realized that his being is being ignored by Lord Chaitanya and the other devotees was actually good for him. He realized it was to cut down his false pride. We have this false pride and maybe material desires also, and so many other anarthas in our heart which are blocking our devotional service. So the Lord arranges situations to help remove whatever false pride is there, so we can actually come to real devotional service. Alright, we're finished there for today. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Kantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Gaura Premanandi. Hare Krishna.